Well, here we are, the 4th of July, and Martin Freeman isn't in America, Martin.
No, I'm actually on one of my trips out here, and it's unfortunate that I'm missing the 4th of July celebrations, but I get to celebrate in other ways in being in South Africa.
Well, in the home of load shedding, but I believe it's not just here where we're seeing load shedding at the moment. And Justin Clark is with us as always, our two chums from Orbvest. Justin, you've got lots to tell us tonight.
Indeed, indeed. First thing is I've got batteries. That's why I've got power. And I think Martin, you've got a generator where you're at right now.
We got a generator. Excuse the noise in the background if you hear.
And
Can't
Stewie is
hear
completely in
and can't.
the
Our Stuart is in Cape Town. He's got his little inverter. We are fortunately in Bryanston, and I don't know if there's load shedding or not, but I can tell you that we had solar installed a few years ago now, and it has been the best investment ever. But maybe not, because when I talk to the members of the BizNews community, and I'm really not blowing smoke up your proverbials, but jeepers, they are happy with Orbvest. It's been generally a better place to have put their money than to have put it into stock markets, which, as we know, have taken an awful pounding over the past 6 months. Worst half year since 1970. Have you found that kind of feedback as well, or does it happen in your game that the person who makes the investment is always the genius, and if something goes wrong, then you're always the fool?
Well, I'll jump in here before Martin. Alec, we were a bit embarrassed by that email, but thanks very much for the endorsement. The thing is that we're not a fund, so we don't give a blended return. And you'll always find tenants that don't pay and buildings that get into trouble. So otherwise you would go and buy the building yourself. You wouldn't need us to actually do the heavy lifting. So we absolutely do have projects that that we have to really work hard on. I think let's be absolutely clear about it. There is a level of risk if you're worried about dividends. And and I think in the future we'll talk about how we kind of moving towards more of a portfolio type play in order to make sure that investors come in on really core or core plus products. If you're investing in a single building, there is always the risk that you're going to have a disruption to your dividend flow. So Mark, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that.
Absolutely. And I just want to add to that, that the one thing that we've done as a team is demonstrated how we can certainly get stuck in when projects have difficulties. And we've resolved the prior ones. So where we are at the moment right now in particular, we have historical projects, as when we inherited some buildings many years ago, and it goes back to one of the times when we had a developer. Since then we focus on stable income producing assets. I think that's the big game changer. If you go into a building that is predominantly already let with long leases, that's great, and that's what you're looking for. If you can put it in a fund, even better. But as Justin said, we have our challenges like any other business, and hopefully you back a team like Orbvest that when these difficulties do arise, we have a plan and we need to figure it out and we need to make sure that we fix them.
I know you did start pools, in other words, diversified options as well. Have they been okay? Have they managed to avoid the inability to pay dividends, etc.?
Yes, and Alec, I'm very pleased to say that a lot of the community are in the Orbvest Diversified Holdings. We call them ODH. Remember, we tested with one, and then we went two, and then now we're on number five. And I think what we will come back to the community with is just consolidating all of those fives under one listing. Remember that these are, in fact, listed instruments. So we've got five listed companies running a very similar portfolio. So we are going to approach investors with the idea of consolidating them into one, which will of course decrease the amount of costs in those structures and of course bump your returns up. So those are performing really, really nicely. And remember that the way that works, Alec, is that as we exit buildings at the end of their 5 year period, you get 50% of the capital gain effectively distributed. So even though the return is low, it slowly will climb up over the period. And we retain the other 50% in order to make sure that we can provide a blended return towards the end when there's less buildings that are obviously feeding the trough. So yeah, I know they're doing very well, Alec. Thank you.
If I remember correctly, that was also you were nudged in that direction by Magnus Haystack, one of our other partners, other business partners here. Is that right, Martin?
So I would say that Magnus is spot on in terms of funds and diversification. You know, we always spoke about diversification. I remember having a webinar once, and that's really the frustration with some of these prior deals, you know, where someone goes into one deal only or two deals, you know, and it's on consecutive deals or with the same partner, you know, and, you know, the whole point of a fund or where you spread your risk in any asset class, and it's not even in real estate. I would be telling the person, even if they had gone into crypto or if they'd gone into equities, you know, we all know it, just diversify. And so when something happens with one out of 10 investments, it doesn't really affect you overall. Bearing in mind in ODH, we were working out the other day that if on 16 buildings, you know, something goes wrong, even in one, or there's a, when we say wrong, potentially a hiccup in dividends or something happens, you know, it's 0.6% variance in your dividend, you know, so it's pretty much immaterial. And obviously the larger the fund, the more diversified.
Well, we've got two big stories to talk about today. The one is your number 40, and the other one is reducing from $5,000 as a barrier to entry to $1,000. So you've got lots to share with the community. But before we go there, Stuart Lohmann always brings us up to date with the tech to make sure that everybody can actually hear us and then knows how to pose the questions, Stu.
Excellent. Thanks, Alec, and welcome, Martin and Justin, as always. So, as you know, I'm in the dark, but I am here. Wi-Fi is working wonders, thankfully. just quickly, if you can see Alec, Martin on screen, hear my voice loud and clear, and there's a presentation underneath, there's a little high-five button on the control panel. If you can give us some high-fives, just there we go. Excellent. They're coming through. That's great. Alec also mentioned questions. On that same control panel, there's a little question mark. If you pop the questions in there, Alec will pass them on to Martin and Justin as they run through. But Alec, all good this side.
Brilliant. And as far as the questions are concerned, I will always only use your first name. So ask the question and you can be sure nobody from any organization that you don't want to know about the question you're asking, because it might be a bit specific, they won't know that you are John or Jan or Godfrey or Philip or whoever you might be. So always only the first name, just to keep you with that bit of anonymity. Right, with the homework all sorted out, who's going to kick off with the presentation tonight?
Hopefully Martin will tell us what Independence Day actually is, you know, South Africans.
So if I'm not mistaken, in 1776, the US gained independence, which really was from Great Britain. And it's when they signed the declaration. And so it really is quite a festive weekend. And you will have seen on the news, pretty much everyone in the US starts to travel. You know, they're going away somewhere. It's the summer. Never mind the fact that travel was chaotic before. I think certainly this weekend it's going to be exacerbated. And so what's generally I hear from people, supposed to be a very relaxing weekend, ends up being quite a stressful weekend. Too many people moving at the same time. It's a big country.
Okay, so there's the Independence Day, and now into, well, the markets are closed in the United States today to celebrate the holiday, and some people would say just as well, Martin.
So, you know, I think that the breather is needed. I don't believe that there's going to be much more good news coming out in the next couple of weeks just from, you know, speaking to people. You know, I think there's so much downward pressure on the economy on globally, you know, what with everything happening, interest rates, inflation still hanging around, logistics, you name it. So the one thing that we look at in terms of the real estate market is the 10-year treasury. And the 10-year treasury really is an indicator of where interest rates are going to be going. And so as everyone knows, the US has hiked interest rates dramatically. And they will continue to do so until inflation turns the corner rapidly. What that means, unfortunately, for the rest of the world is the rest of the world's probably going to follow suit. So unfortunately, if you're listening from all the different countries currently, it's probably going to happen the same in your area. However, the good news is that I can say to everyone that, much to everyone's surprise, given the fact that there's talk about a potential recession, that the 10-year Treasury on Thursday and Friday actually turned the corner, and instead of powering up above 3%, actually started to move back down below 3%. Now, that's obviously bad if you consider there's a recession coming, but it's good if you consider the fact that it means possibly inflation may turn the corner and interest rates might not spike up as much as they are saying if this trend continues.
It's a heck of a question, isn't it, at the moment? Very, very complex, big bets being taken on both sides of the interest rate story. But primarily, overall, investments are investments, and they're good if you keep them for the long term. And I think that's they can bump up and down all over the place, Martin. But that's I think why people like property, and particularly what Orbvest is offering, because it is bricks and mortar, and it's going to be there when maybe some of the more fashionable investment opportunities aren't.
Yeah, and we're going to go through some slides now, and we'll show the reason why we still believe that our thesis is very, very strong, and why around the world people still love real estate in any country, in any asset class. So maybe if we can just move on to the next couple of slides.
Before we do, there is a question that I think is going to frame for quite a lot of people. Tace has asked, obviously picking up on the fact that you are now going to let people invest for $1,000 instead of $5,000. He asked, what is the minimum amount to invest to make it worthwhile? Do you have any a feel on that?
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't mind. Very strong point. And I'll jump in first, Justin. That is that it's irrelevant whether you invest 10,000 Rand, 100,000 Rand, or 1,000,000 Rand. You know, as long as you're getting the same relative return, you know, and as long as you are consistently growing your wealth through dividend, you know, as dividend producing assets, and replying those assets into further assets. That's my perspective, Justin.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit more color there, Alec. You know, the $1,000 investment, guys, if you are, you know, looking at a return on $1,000, it's not a lot of money in a year. And if you intend to repatriate that money or do anything with it, you know, your bank charges are going to kill that investment. So the reason why we have not really offered it in the past is that we don't think it's actually worthwhile. If you've only got $1,000 and that's your total bet, no, don't do it. Put it in something local where you don't have to worry about moving money around the world. But I think that the intention, Alec, is that, you know, sometimes you just have to taste it first. And once we get people in with $1,000, they do five and then they do 10. And so, you know, it's just really a taster. Come and check it out, see how it works. Get onto the platform, play with it a little bit, and that's the real intention. So to answer Tace's question, if it's your only $1,000, do something else with it. But if you want to test the waters, this is a great way to do it.
Brilliant. Let's move on.
So the next slide is very interesting, and what this really shows is over time, you see the graph that is actually sparking upwards, the line that's sparking upwards, and that is the transaction volume. And what you can see is over the past years, since talk of, you know, recession and the equities market starting to move sideways, the amount of money that is poured into real estate in most countries, and in particular the US, has been absolutely astounding. So every single person you speak to in the US is wanting to park their money somewhere. Well, clearly they can't put it in the bank, they can't put it in crypto, you know, and they need to find a home for it. The other thing is that we'll talk about just now, real estate has always been a great inflation hedge because of the fact that it does increase over time, whereas other assets maybe aren't showing the same trends. But what that does is as you have more and more money flowing in, the yellow graph, which is showing downwards, is the cap rate. What that means is you're paying more for those same buildings because there's more people competing for it. What is happening at the moment right now, and we've seen it quite instantaneously, is as interest rates are pushing up, so what's happening is that buyers like ourselves are saying, simply can't pay you, Mr. Seller, the same price for your building. You need to be more accommodating. And sellers actually understand that. So although the interest rates might have bumped up by half a point, maybe 0.75, so the cap rates are also moving back up to accommodate for that, because I think all of the buyers are just holding their ground.
Just explain that orange line again. Is TTM transaction volume? Does that mean that there has been more turnover?
Yes. So the volume of transactions over the past year has really rocketed, and I think it continues to climb. And so pretty much every month there's some announcement of someone in the US forming a new joint venture or wanting to get into multifamily or industrial or medical office buildings and wanting to put a lot of money at work. So with all that competitiveness, you know, you really need to make sure that you've got access to off-market transactions. So you see that the graph over here where you can see the volumes just consistently increasing. And what that really shows is that two things. Number one, yes, there's more money coming in. But the second thing is that medical office buildings have really shown their resilience over the last couple of years. And it's become a proper recognized, you know, asset class. People were saying when we went to the last couple of shows that, you know, a few years ago, there really was quite a small community there. But now you see all the big players there now. They're all coming to see what's happening and to figure out how they can expand their portfolio, given its resilience of late.
So CRE, what does that stand for?
Commercial real estate.
Yeah, so this is the market in general, Alec. So, you know, I think the commercial real estate market is benefiting from these funds that are moving out of the markets and looking for, say, you know, sort of inflation hedged, you know, safe haven. So this is across the entire market. And I think that's what Martin is saying, is that, you know, if you look at the commercial real estate space as a whole, there are a couple of niches that are exciting, and there are a couple that you've got to be very nervous of. And for example, I would say retail and office, although retail in itself has actually picked up in the US, which is quite strange. You know, generally people are looking for these niches, and that's why there's so much competition for these medical real estate assets.
I guess it all makes sense when you think that there's a high risk trying to catch a falling knife, whether it's in equities in America, whether it's in bonds, which are having had their worst half year ever in history, whether it's in crypto. And at least with real estate, it's not exactly a falling knife that you're making your investment in. It might be a little more expensive today, but you aren't likely to have to try and gauge the bottom. Is that a fair comment, Martin?
I think that certainly is a fair comment. As we said, you know, we really want to stress, because sometimes we do get these questions, you know, is everything peachy and is everything just perfect? And like anything, you know, if it was, everyone would be doing it. You know, it's not. It's got its challenges, but you need to pick your niche, and you need to know that, you know, overall with a diversified portfolio, you're going to get the good consistent returns. And I think notwithstanding the commercial real estate market in South Africa, which has really taken a hammering over the last couple of years, for things which are beyond just the fundamentals of commercial real estate, you know, be it political or load shedding or whatever else it is, you know, in the developed markets, it is pretty consistent. And, you know, the fundamentals do underpin, as I said, you know, the thesis. This just shows again, you know, the trend with medical office buildings. But I think what's important to note is particularly over 2021 into 22, when, you know, we really started to see the bounce in terms of predictions this year, that really most of the large players believe that there will be records broken, purely because there's a lot of us all chasing it. And then don't forget also that a number of the buildings that were disrupted during the COVID period are now coming on track. A lot of those buildings that are being developed by the developers are now being finished. The tenants are moving in. And as they start to come into the market, those are being sold off, because developers don't generally hold buildings. They want to build them and then sell them on. So this is very important to understand. In the commercial real estate sector, in the US, the building is generally purchased based on the NOI, which is the net operating income. So the higher your income, the more your building is generally worth. And so what's happening is that we talk about the increase in your net operating income, which is based on your rentals. So for example, if you had 10 tenants in a building and all of them were paying $18, and then they started paying 19 and 20 and 21, et cetera, what it means is your building is generating more cash flow and it's worth more money. And so what you've seen is the consistent increase of generally a minimum of 2% growth every year. But what's happened since the inflation movement is that we're now starting to see escalations of between 2.5% and 3%. And that's very encouraging. And hence it goes back to the whole discussion around, is it an inflation hedge? And so absolutely it is. So the other aspect to note is that as your older tenants are falling off in terms of their leases, you're bringing new tenants on, they might have been paying $18 a square, they're coming back into the market now, and all of a sudden a couple of years later, they're gonna be paying $21, which is very encouraging for landlords.
That's an interesting point. And just to remind you, and I know there are a couple more questions that we do have that will be posed, but we're just waiting for the presentation. Just to remind you that if you'd like to pose a question, have a look on your control panel and you'll see there's a question mark. Click on that and you can type your question in. So this is interactive and it is a opportunity for you to pose your questions to the two of the three musketeers in Orbis. This disclaimer, Justin?
My favorite slide of the whole deck, Alec, yes. Please guys, you know, this is a very serious business. We take people's money very seriously. Certainly we don't sleep at night if we have concerns about your money. But I think just understand that these workshops are for informal purposes. We bring you up to speed with what's going on. Please don't make any investment, decide to buy or sell any securities without first getting advice from an expert. Don't take our tax advice as gospel. Always check up with your own tax authority. Bear in mind, our investments are all offshore. So any tax you would have to deal with would be repatriating your funds from offshore back to South Africa. And then, of course, the other thing that we always must note is that we are a registered financial services provider. So after that, Alec, let's move on.
Yeah, it's important. This often people just wave beyond or the disclaimer and thing was not relevant. Of course, you've got to know exactly what it is that you're getting yourself into. So although you've been our partners for the last 3 years, we're very confident in this partnership. It still doesn't mean that just because you trustworthy people or trustworthy company that people can just walk into the investments blind. You really need to open your eyes in every single investment, including this one.
Justin, right, before Alex, we jump into it, okay. I did just want to say one thing, just, and that is that, you know, as we've given the introduction, it suddenly, you know, came to mind that, you know, maybe a lot of the new listeners tonight are not aware of exactly one of the other things about why medical office buildings. And so I'm just going to give a quick snippet before Justin moves into the rest of the presentation. And so, you know, just to reiterate, we believe that medical tenants, when they're in your building, are very sticky. They sign long-term leases. They generally are very profitable. They're part of the community and they stay. And that is the reason why we like medical. You know, by way of an example, one of our other buildings, Alec, which we are trying to fill, you know, we've just signed a brand new lease with a dentist. They've signed a 10-year lease with escalations every single year. You know, that's the kind of tenants you would generally find in the medical space, signing between 5 and 10-year leases and also on a triple net basis, meaning that they pay for all the expenses that arise in the building. And so, Justin, back to you. Apologies for that interruption.
Oh, great. Thanks, Mark. I think we did kind of miss that part for any newbies, Alec, that are not understanding why, you know, we have this hyper focus on medical. Alec, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, a note is effectively a loan that you would make to a company on a basis that you would get some sort of fixed return on that note. And we realized, and the reason why we actually created this is we realized that there was a lot of investors that they don't reinvest their dividends immediately because, as you know, we don't have sort of an auto-invest function. It just piles up in your trading account, which we call a wallet. And we looked at this number and we said, my gosh, there's a lot of people sitting here not earning money. And at the same time, people are asking us, listen, what can we do with our money while it's not earning anything? So we launched this initially just for our existing investors to say, if you have money that is sitting around doing nothing and you haven't decided whether you're going to invest it or take it out and put it into crypto or whatever it is you're going to do with it, stick it into a note until you make up your mind. And we created this note. And then we got, interest from, you know, others that are sitting with large amounts of cash that are sitting offshore that is earning absolutely nothing. Because although interest rates have moved, really your fixed deposit or your income on cash sitting in a bank account is still pretty much close to zero. So we have decided to extend it to a broader community. In fact, you know, anybody who wants to earn some interest on their money while it's sitting offshore can invest in a note. So yeah, we launched it about a month ago, initially to our existing investors, as I mentioned. It is, like all of our other products, listed on the exchange in the Seychelles, and there is the ISIN number and stock code number. Initially, we are marketing this in conjunction with marketing partners because of the nature of a note. But let's just move forward into a few slides, and I'll try and give you, Alex, a little bit of idea of what the benefits are. So minimum investment. At this stage, we've kept it quite high, and that's to the question earlier from, I think, Theo. You know, it's really not worth your while to put $1,000 into a note. So $10,000, we don't charge any management fees. There is an annual yield of 4%, which is paid monthly, dropped into your wallet. So you can see that you are earning on a monthly basis, and it's paid on the first of each month into your wallet. So you can log on and go and have a look and see it there. And if you move on, I'll show you quickly how we built onto our platform, you know, a complete management system. Interest type, as I said, annualized, paid monthly, simple interest. The notice period, Alec, and that's why we call it a short-term note, is 2 calendar months. So give us notice, 2 full calendar months, and we drop your money back into the wallet, and you can then draw it out again. Bear in mind always, when you draw it out, there are bank charges, and there's also a $20 exchange a transfer fee. And the reason why they charge that is they validate that they're sending it to the correct account. And they often do a proper check. And then tax, as I mentioned, there's no tax in the Seychelles. That's why we use that particular domicile. But please get tax advice if you want to repatriate those funds to any other part of the world. And then I did mention that I would, let's just look at the risk structure, because I think that's very important. If you look at, you know, risk versus return, obviously you can do very, very handsomely on the markets if you time it right, like you did with your portfolio pre the collapse, the Alec. And on the other side, you've got bonds and fixed deposits, you know, and then our products. So what we're really trying to say here is that, you know, we focus on these core products, ODH and triple net, but bear in mind, it's also a variable return. So you get a little bit more money for putting your money into a product, but then a product, there is some risk there, although not much because it's spread, as Martin said, over 16 odd investments. And the note really is a promise from Orbest to obviously pay you back your money. So, you know, the big question always comes in, you know, what underpins that investment? And I think the only thing really is the Orbest balance sheet. And the other thing to understand is we don't use that for anything else other than for closing. And this is very important to understand. We raise money on a continuous basis where people invest with us, and then we buy assets. And we need to make sure that we can commit to closing. So we need to make sure there are always funds available for closing, regardless of the you know, of where we are with the fundraise. And in fact, we want to decouple raising money, you know, from closing, because it's just you know, it's not nice to try and manage your cash flow to that point. And also, where the market was certainly a month or two ago, you know, the sellers were saying, show us your money first before we talk to you. And so, you know, we have to show them that we've got whatever it is, the $5 million of equity and the you know, $8 million or $6 million of debt already lined up before they want to even talk to us about closing on it. So we do need to have cash on hand to be able to prove to these sellers that we're good for it. So that's really what it is. It's a bridging loan only used for acquisitions. So your funds are always sitting, making money somewhere, and then we obviously share that with you. So that's the note, Alec, and I think it's the first time that we've spoken about the note broadly to the market, you know, so outside of our existing investors. And yeah, this is just to give you an idea. We've got this dashboard on the website where you can control your life, pull returns, statements, etc. And we've got a little thing. You can see the white block at the top nav bar where it shows the note, and you can see what you've invested the note. And of course, you can cancel the note, you can withdraw the note amount, et cetera, et cetera. Don't need to go into too much detail, except just to mention that, you know, it's all built into the platform and it's something that you can manage yourself. And
Justin, if I could just jump in here and just say that, you know, on the note, one of the things that became very apparent to us is that, you know, the US, it's become very, very popular, the short-term notes. And the reason why also, Alec, is that a number of investments are generally for 3, 5, or 10 years. And people just don't want to invest that long. You know, we often get asked the question by new investors, you know, do you have something shorter than 5 years? And the answer is not really. You know, so people want to get in. They don't mind putting their money in for 6 months, 9 months, a year, you know, but they don't want to be tied in for 5 years, especially in South Africa, because the common comment we always get is, I don't even know where I'm going to be living in 2 years' time, let alone 5 years' time. So do you have something that's a little bit more flexible? So it's become incredibly popular. And bearing in mind that when we normally borrow bridging funds from larger players elsewhere or in the US, we pay a lot more. So it's just a benefit for both sides. But so most of the big platforms are all introducing these short-term notes as a way of just attracting new investors, and it's a win-win for both sides.
Just sounds a lot more sensible, having your cash flows organized and giving you the ammo to be able to go into the marketplace and close the deals without having to scramble around trying to find the money that you need at that point in time. So it makes a lot of sense, and an interesting vehicle that you now have available.
Thanks,
Alec. Talk about Albert. Yeah. Albuquerque.
Yes, let's talk. Go for it.
Yeah, that was where, as a kid, I remember we had a guy here called Piri Furi, who was a boxer, and he fought against the great Bob Foster, who gave him a terrible hiding in Albuquerque. I'm sure that was the same town. Anyway, I don't know if you guys remember that or if you were boxing fans.
No, that one escaped me.
Yeah, the gray hair there is giving you away. Oh, sorry, I'm also, okay, no, we won't talk about that.
Where is this place? Where is it?
Right, it's New Mexico. And, you know, it's so fascinating because, you know, our whole hypothesis when we started off, you know, looking at the U.S. from South Africa, you know, we said we'd identify these specific states, you know, thinking in a typically South African way, we'd find a partner who's very strong. And then we go and beg that partner to come and, allow us to invest alongside them. And that was our sort of initial approach to the market, as you'd remember when we first spoke to you, Alec. And I think we've learned a ton of stuff. First of all, that the state is not really always the important thing, because you have some cities that are exceptionally well managed and attract an enormous amount of investment. So previously, New Mexico wasn't really on our radar. And you know, just to give people an insight, I mean, we've got an analyst that's employed in Atlanta that all he does all day, Alec, is plow through deals that Martin digs up through his schmoozing, or, you know, that come to us as a result of our deals team. And
What? Schmoozing?
Schmoozing, yeah. Yeah.
I call it networking.
Yeah, networking. That's more. Oh, that I get. Schmoozing. That sounds a bit smooth. Sorry, Justin.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I've got to have a uppercut every now and again to Martin. So yes, indeed. I think we discovered New Mexico, and we started looking at these deals in Albuquerque. Our team went down there, and he has some amazing stats about this place. That many, like you've said, you know, the only thing you can tie it to is a boxing match way back in the 60s, I think, Alec. But
at least the late 70s, but anyway, yeah.
I think first of all, what is happening in the US, you've got a lot of migration from California on the west and from New York in the east, sort of towards the Sunshine States, and that's not a secret, you know, that's part of, you know, every investment hypothesis. And and this is quite close to California, New Mexico, and the investment here is unbelievable. The first thing that I didn't realize is it's the third biggest oil producer in the US. Okay, so you're not an oil guy. It is also the largest renewables state in the US, second largest in solar with about 160 megawatts, if I remember correctly, and 11th largest in terms of wind. And so 10th largest in terms of gas. And I'm giving you a lot of arbitrary stats here, but you know, this is a proper state with some real fundamentals. there's a lot of other investment there in defense and federal spend. But let's go back to your fangirls, Alec. Netflix, $1 billion studio. This particular Albuquerque was rated the number one spot for making movies in the entire US by Movie Maker magazine. It's pretty much regarded as the place to make movies. And they put $1 billion into their latest studio, which is going up at the moment. Intel, $3.5 billion in their Rio Rancho campus. I think they're in the process of employing 1,300 senior employees earning in the region of $140,000 a year. Facebook, their Los Luna data center that's being built there, I think that's also over $1 billion. So there's an enormous amount of investment in this particular space. And we also discovered that in terms of office and medical office especially, there is no vacancy. I mean, 2.5% vacancy in medical office. And when we looked at those offices, they all, the offices in the corner that the guy doesn't want because it's a 50 square foot office and it's got the door that, leads into the toilet. So, there really is not great stuff that's available there. And there is nothing else. And the other thing is there's not a lot of new builds. So there's very little in terms of new plans being approved. So suddenly we realized, hey, we're onto something here. And we started really sort of persevering and we came across this building. And we don't, we talk a lot about funds, but when we do single buildings, we make sure that we do a core or a core plus asset, which means that it's underpinned by real credit tenants, high credit tenants that are going to pay the rent at the end of the day. So, that is now a fundamental when we look at single buildings. And if you move on a little bit, I probably got ahead of the slide, but you can see it's a beautiful building. I think built in 1999, but there's been quite a lot of investment lately. And obviously, while we like the deal, and I'll give you the summary first, if we go to the next page. Yeah, it's the largest city in New Mexico. And I think I mentioned a little, a couple of the advantages, Intel, Netflix, Facebook, if you're looking at the FAMGAs. And of course, there it is. This building it's 85% leased. And the three tenants that are in there are investment grade tenants. In other words, listed NASDAQ companies or insurance companies with 200 offices or whatever. The location of the building is awesome. It's right on the I-25 with huge amount of visibility from the freeway, from the I-25. And as I say, there's quite a lot of tax incentives and economic trade zones pulling investment in from California, a lot of relocation of tech companies especially. So that's it. We love the area, and this building was just a great find in this particular market. Yeah, there you get a little idea of the location relative to the freeways. You'll see the building is sort of in the middle of the picture there. Biggest tenant there, as you can see, is Quest Diagnostics. They've been there pretty much since the beginning of the building. The little white dotted line there, Quest Diagnostics is a laboratory. And they New York Exchange listed laboratory, a huge amount of fit out and refrigeration in special water purification. It's a significant investment that they've got there. They've even got that little white dotted line, which is where their vehicles come and go in order to dispatch, collect samples and from all over the state. So, and when I get to the rent roll, you'll see that their lease actually expires in 2 to 3 years' time. And we've taken a very conservative view. We've said that we must plan in the event that they don't renew. But in the tenant interviews, they've already indicated that they absolutely want to renew. And in fact, we'll even try and see if we can't squash them into the vacant space as well. Then Sonbello is another really, really interesting tenant. They are in the process of doing their build out. Mark, I don't know if you remember the number, but I think they've invested of their own money just over $1 million in TI. It is a plastic surgery operator. They're in a number of locations throughout the US. And then finally, the little tenant on the edge there is WAFD. It's a insurance company with 200 offices around the country. Very happy and, as I say, credit tenant absolutely going to pay the rent every month. So yeah, I think that's why we really like it, Alec. I think we've got one or two other slides just to give you a little bit of detail there. I think we've got the rent roll there. Next one. Yeah, there's Quest with 45% of the building. And as I say, we've built in a very large buffer, as well as $2 million of TI allowance in the event that they did move out. We are 99% sure that they're going to renew, and we will start that negotiation almost immediately. If they do renew, then we'll release the buffer and we'll improve the returns. If they don't renew, then we've taken a very conservative view anyway, with the intent of replacing them. And then the vacant space is a nice little value add. Remember, when you buy a building, you don't pay for the vacant space because, as Martin mentioned, it's NOI, the relationship between NOI and cap. And so the vacant space is free. If you fill it, you get a bonus. So nice little value add there. And I think you can see from the vacancy factor, there's a little vacancy now. We obviously intend to fill it. We are confident that we can fill it. And we're also fairly confident that we can renew Quest, in which case this is a fantastic building to exit in 5 to 5 years' time. So yeah, I think that's it. Let's get to the next one there quickly, Alec. The other thing, always with fundamentals, super important that the fundamentals are right, Alec. You can see that we have acquired this building at $188 per square foot. And I mean, you can see some of the yellow lines there. That's what buildings have changed hands for on a square foot basis. So, you know, the market has paid $350 a square foot in 4Q 2021. You can't look at 1Q 2021 because it's, you know, obviously that was quite early in the year. And we're led to believe that the replacement value of this building is in excess of $400 a square foot now, with, you know, with the inflation moving in the direction that it has. So fundamentally, you bought an amazingly good building for $188 a square foot, which means you can't really, you know, you can't really go wrong with when you're buying, you know, such a good asset for such a good price. Cap rates, for any of you who understand cap rates, 6.72%. Mark, you love to talk about cap rates. I don't know if you want to chip in there.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we were originally 3 years ago buying deals at cap rates of, you know, 6.75. And then as the money started to flow in and so it became more competitive, it moved down towards the levels of 6 cap rate and below. That really means that if, for example, you had to invest $100,000, you would be at a 6 cap rate, be comfortable with $6,000 return. At a 5.5, you're comfortable with only 5.5. The fact that we got it at 6.72 means we're almost pushing back to levels that we were acquiring 3 years ago, which is very encouraging, notwithstanding everything going on in the US.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, for anybody who's been around on any of these webinars before, you know, this is the breakdown that you would find in the brochure. I'm not going to get into too much detail. 63% loan to value. In other words, we're going to borrow, you know, more than 50% of the equity in the building. Debt cover ratio of over 2, which is a very good fundamental. And then the thing that I really want to highlight is that in year one, we are taking, as I mentioned, a very conservative view. We will be releasing 5.5% cash on cash. And the purpose for that is we are holding on to and building a large a buffer in the event that we have to replace Sonbello. So the buffer plus the $2 million of Quest, yeah. So yeah, and obviously if they renew, then that changes that picture quite dramatically. So yeah, don't be put off by the 5.5. Just bear in mind it's 5.5, but we're holding back, you know, a very large buffer in excess of $200,000. In the event that particular tenant doesn't renew.
Justin, and there are a couple of things that jump out at me, I think, in this context. The one was that sharp decline in the purchase price, which we had there for the first quarter. And now $188 a square foot is a long way from what people have been paying. And then secondly, has that been influenced by the fact that the tenant might not renew. Is that the reason you got it so cheap?
Yeah, I think that definitely would have impacted on the cap rate there, Alec. You're absolutely right. And then remember that there is the vacant space. So the vacant space counts for zero in the valuation, and that would impact that cost per square foot. So yeah, you know, again, a conservative view on range for a international investor, and while we separate the two, a US accredited investor pays his own taxes in America. The international investor takes advantage of the structure that, you know, we came up with 4 years ago now, that used the Seychelles as a conduit for people to invest. And it's incredibly efficient when it comes to tax. So after tax, your money lands in the Seychelles with a 12 to 13% overall internal rate of return over the 5 years. And once again, just let me highlight that that is what we have made an assumption. We are exiting a few more buildings this year, hopefully, Alec, and we think that we can show that we can beat our assumptions. And that's always our intention. That's why those numbers are normally quite conservative. So yeah, I think that's
the jump in there and just also say, you know, internal rate of return, it's your total cash dividends you receive over the period together with your capital gain at the end. And so when you weight those over each year, for example, if you've got 8% cash on cash, and then you sold the building and you divided that over the 5 years and you got another 3% every year based on the capital gain, that's 8 plus 3 is 11. So that's how you get to those kind of numbers.
Absolutely. And then, you know, just to end off, Alec, I think a very important thing to note is that, again, when we approached this thing, you know, 8 odd years ago, as a bunch of South Africans at that stage, ostensibly, we decided that we would lean very heavily on partners. And you will notice that the last couple of deals we've done, we do not use partners, or we prefer not to use partners. I'm not saying we'll never use them. This building, we will be operating and running ourselves. And just so that you understand, when you have a partner, you rely on getting secondhand information. When you've got a partner, you also, you have a delay in getting the information. You don't have your hand on the bank account. You don't see who's paying their rent and who isn't. And if the partner doesn't perform, it's difficult to replace them. Whereas in our case, if we have a property manager that we wish to replace, it's very easy in the US. You fire them and you get somebody else. You can put it out to multiple brokers if you want to fill the space, and you can play the brokers off against each other. A lot of the partners like to keep that in-house and use their own internal sort of brokerage, which sometimes doesn't work in your favor. So this building, the final comment is magic that we are doing this thing on our own balance sheet. And so we absolutely control everything. We control the bank account. We control everything. So that's it, Alec. Albuquerque. Three deals that I would recommend if you are risk averse. We've still got ODH5 coming to an end. That's the spread of assets. This is a beautiful building. It really is, an absolute prize. And then finally, there is the note, and you can test it for $1,000.
There we go. Interesting questions here from Thomas to start the first one. Stu, I'm struggling a little bit with some technical issue here, so I'm not sure why, but I can't open the question. So if I disappear, please just jump in afterwards. But let's just start first, Martin and Justin, with Thomas's question. Any reason why Medical 38 took so much longer to be fully subscribed? Was it building specific or just investors sitting on their cash?
I think that when things started to move earlier this year, and there was talk about inflation issues, etc., we always notice that cash starts to lag. I think that was the one aspect. And I think the other aspect was that, you know, we normally have a cornerstone investor. So whenever there's not a cornerstone investor, what you'll find is it takes a little bit longer for us to raise it. And that's okay. We don't mind that. Because ultimately what we do want to do is still make sure that people have a piece of the deals versus you know, a lot of other competitors, they might have a large funder will come in and take the entire equity. That's not our model.
Yeah, I think I actually think about that answer, Alec. You know, what we did is we didn't have new projects. If I remember correctly, we closed 39 first. That went very quickly because we had, as Martin said, a cornerstone investor that took most of that out. And then on this particular deal, we had a bridge, which is for ODH. So effectively, we keep a piece of that building out, which we put into all the ODHs. And we had to take away little bits of the ODH to put back into circulation. There was a delay in closing, and I think that was purely because the seller was a doctor and he didn't understand all the things that he had to do in order to make the closing happen. So the closing was delayed. But luckily, we've not only closed, but we've closed and listed that in very, very quick succession. So to answer your question, yeah, it was slow, but I think that the majority of the slowness was really because we had delays in the actual closing, predominantly because the seller was a doctor and not a property guy.
Alec, I can't seem to hear you.
I think we've lost Alec. Alec, you there? No. I'll pick up, guys. There's a question from Peter here. He says, what's the effect of the high interest rate? Oh, there we go. You're back, Alec.
I am back, yeah. But carry on, Steve.
So Peter just wants to ask, what's the effect of the high interest rate on your property deals, or they're bought in cash?
So all the deals are generally bought on a 65-35 debt to equity, or otherwise known as LTV, loan to value. So it means if you buy a $10 million building, you'll have approximately $6.5 million debt and $3.5 million equity. On the interest rate on the debt, we were originally paying, call it 3.75. That's moved initially to around 4.5 with the Fed hiking the rates, and then up to potentially even 5 at the moment. We certainly hope it doesn't go too much above 5. And in fact, as I said earlier, with the 10-year Treasury starting to move backwards a bit, we are also at least happy with the fact that it's not spiking as much as they originally anticipated. So the last thing is I just want to mention is that we use a metric known as SOFA, which is a rate between the banks. And so it's like your prime overdraft rate in South Africa. So what will happen is there'll be an amount over and above SOFA. Hope that answers the question.
There's a question from Mike who says, am I only able to buy in when you sign up a new building, or are the participation shares always available?
Mike, yeah, that's a great question. I think our model up till now has always been we acquire a building, whatever the equity is we need, let's say it's $4 million, we list that on the exchange, and then when it's fully subscribed, that's it. It doesn't close, it lists. The closing happens on its own timetable, as I mentioned. So there's a limited amount of equity available. The only other way you would be able to get into that deal was buying from a seller who wanted to sell, and that does actually happen. Or alternatively, buying an ODH, in which case you get that lumped in with a bunch of other other shares. I hope that answers the question correctly. Going forward,
maybe if I can jump in here and also just say that, you know, all our buildings on average are typically $15 million or more on average. And so, you know, you get a $10 million debt and you get $5 million equity. The $5 million equity gets consolidated around the world. It goes into an escrow account, and that means it's held by the lawyers. It's only at closing that money gets moved across, just like if you bought a property in South Africa. We get the title deed, the seller gets the money, and that's handled by large companies in America that do that. So what then happens there afterwards, regardless of when it physically actually, you might get an email that says, we've now listed on Merge, the exchange, for the international investors, it doesn't make a difference. From the time that the money leaves the lawyer's account and we own the building, all the revenue or profit from that building accrues to Orbest.
Zipa's question relates, sorry, Justin?
I was just trying to just put it in context to compare it, for example, to a property, a listed property fund, where you can continue to buy in at whatever the demand and supply pricing makes that particular portfolio. And I think, you know, always what has been popular for this particular product is that, you know, effectively you invest $100,000, your investment is worth $100,000 until such time as we sell the building. We say, hold on a second, we've made a capital profit of 30%, suddenly your $100,000 is worth more. So, you know, that's kind of the attractiveness versus a REIT or fund that you can continue to buy equity in the same fund.
We're getting close to the end of our webinar this evening. Zippo's question relates to the investment note. He says he's interested in investing $10,000. So let me get this straight. The annual yield is 4% and the monthly divvy, how does that work?
It's effectively just 1/12 of 4%.
So that 4% per annum, which will then be divided into 12, and you'll get paid that into your wallet every month. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Devin wanted to know, when will the triple net leased lease deal list?
That's a good question. So I think, Alec, we actually launched triple net with you, it must have been about 8 months ago. And if you remember correctly, that portfolio at that time, the intention was to go out and buy DaVita's and CVS triple net lease buildings. I think Martin's perhaps better at telling the story because he was extremely passionate about this product. And by the time we got that thing to market, we couldn't actually buy those things at less than a cap rate of coming down to 5%. If it was 5.5, it had no escalation or there were some warts on it. So that went particularly slowly. I'm pleased to say that we're closing on two new buildings for the triple net portfolio. And as soon as we've got those two new buildings, we will relaunch it. As far as listing is concerned, we are past the listing date. So I guess that we can probably list it now that we bring these two buildings in. But, I think there's a bigger conversation about that triple net and how we refactor it to take into consideration where the market is at the moment.
But just to answer it differently also, the funds that were raised initially, we acquired that dental building earlier this year. And so all that money's been put to work. Investors are earning their dividends and it's being paid out, in fact. That's not the reason why we launched it. We launched it because we wanted to end up with 10, 20, 30 assets in it. But, the one thing that you've learned with us is that we're not just going to buy at crazy prices, and the prices weren't making sense and we weren't prepared to pay. And so now that the market's starting to soften, in fact, the team has actually been on the prowl to see if we can't pick up those assets again. And now what we believe is a more moderated, reasonable price.
Peter's question is this part of our overseas allowance by SARS? And if so, can we use SHIFT? Nice questions.
No, they are nice questions. Peter, absolutely. So you've got your million rand that you can move as your discretionary. You've got your 10 million that you can move as well, and that's per person in your family. You can move it via SHIFT. I will just warn you, we have had a few problems with people moving money on SHIFT. You've just got to make sure that you fill out the registration on SHIFT and put in there's a very obvious mistake that people make that means that your money ends up getting lost in the banker sphere. And that sometimes can be enormously frustrating. So if you're going to use SHIFT, just please speak to one of our consultants and make sure that you fill in that thing exactly as they will recommend. Otherwise, you might find that your money ends up bouncing around for a month.
And we will definitely ask Arno if there's anything that goes on with SHIFT, another of our partners. Well, thanks, guys. We've got to 8 o'clock. It's whizzed by. Albuquerque it is. It'll take me back to my youth listening to the radio. There weren't even television stations there, so it must have been in the mid-70s. And Pierre Faurie, and I'm sure it was Bob Foster. Anyway, I'll have to go and Google that and find out exactly where that connection came in. But it sounds like a fascinating project. Also, the $1,000 now, that also does open, although I take what you said earlier, Justin, when one is looking to diversify and you don't have millions of rands, then $5,000 can be quite a big hit, a one-off hit. So there are members of our community who are going to be very appreciative, certainly from the feedback I've had, that you have reduced that. And as always, lovely having you on our platform, talking to our community, explaining, answering the questions, continuing to take us along your journey. It's been a lovely 3 years together, Martin, and I am looking forward to at least the next three. Where are you now? Because when I look back 3 years ago, your portfolio was $200 million. How big is it today?
So the portfolio is now over $400 million. It's quite a milestone for us to get to Medicorp 40, especially from the aspect, as I said earlier tonight, you know, that though the old model up until, let's say, 2019 of doing different deals and developer deals, we then swung dramatically to stable income producing assets that we believe meet the criteria over time. And so you can see we've grown from, medical, 27 all the way up to now 40, and long may it continue into 50 and more, So I think that just continues, as in the words of Justin, he always reminds me that provided you are, growing consistently and building the brand and doing all the right things, hopefully the community will continue to support us.
Well, it's interesting to have that feedback. In 3 years, you've doubled in size, 200 to 400 million, which is quite an extraordinary growth rate. And it has also been interesting for me to watch the progress. And you made more mention in that tonight as well, Justin, that you're doing different things now because they make more sense, i.e., you don't need partners anymore. You can do this on your own. Whereas for the first few years, you needed partners. So we hope you're going to continue being our partner into the future, many years into the future, and look forward to the next time that you have something interesting to tell our community. Thank you. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com. Thanks for being with us tonight. To Martin Freeman, not as per usual in New York, but actually knocking around somewhere in South Africa. We won't ask you where, but wherever you are, you have got power. And Justin Clark, who's always based in South Africa. It's been our pleasure. Till the next time. Cheerio.
Thank you.
Night.